Our scripture reading for this morning will be taken from the last chapter of the Gospel of John, John chapter 21, beginning with verse 1, and I'll be reading from the New American Standard Bible. John chapter 21, beginning with verse 1. After these things, Jesus manifested himself again to the disciples at the Sea of Tiberias, and he manifested himself in this way. Simon Peter and Thomas called Didymus and Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, and the sons of Zebedee and two others of the disciples were together. Simon said to them, "I am going fishing." And they said to him, "We will come with you." They went out and got into the boat, and that night they caught nothing. But when the day was breaking, Jesus stood on the beach. Yet the disciples did not know that it was Jesus. So Jesus said to them, "Children, you do not have any fish, do you?" And they answered him, "No." And he said to them, "Cast the net on the right side of the boat, and you will find a catch." So they cast, and then they were not able to haul it in because of the great number of fish. Therefore, that disciple whom Jesus loved said to Peter, "It's the Lord." So when Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on his outer garment, for he was stripped for work, and threw himself into the sea. When the other disciples came in a little boat, for they were not far from land, but about 100 yards away, dragging the net full of fish. So when they got out on the land, they saw a charcoal fire already laid, and fish placed on it, and bread. And Jesus said to them, "Bring some of the fish which you have now caught." Simon Peter went up and drew the net to land full of large fish, 153. And although there were so many, the net was not torn. Jesus said to them, "Come and have breakfast." None of the disciples ventured to question him, "Who are you?" knowing that it was the Lord. And Jesus came and took the bread and gave it to them, and the fish likewise. This is now the third time that Jesus was manifested to the disciples after he was raised from the dead. So when they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" And he said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." And he said to him, "Tend my lambs." He said to him again a second time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" And he said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." And he said to him, "Shepherd my sheep." He said to him a third time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Peter was grieved because he said to him the third time, "Do you love me?" And he said to him, "Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you." And Jesus said to him, "Tend my sheep." This is one of those chapters that preaches itself, doesn't it? It's so easy to visualize. To see a group of seven out on a small boat, that'd be a crowded place to be, wouldn't it? Out on a small boat fishing. The sun rising over the Sea of Galilee. We've seen that happen more than once because on our trip to Israel, we stayed at a hotel in the city of Tiberias that was on the shore of the Sea of Galilee, the western shore, no less. And so we watched the sun rise over the horizon. And as the sun comes up, it's been a fruitless night. No fish caught. You ever been there? You say, "That's no miracle." I've gone fishing many a time and not caught a thing. But the sun comes up and no fish in the boat. probably a little tired and discouraged. But someone standing on the shore as the sun rises. And they call out, have you ever asked other fishermen, having any luck? Doing any good? And if they say, yeah, we're slaying them, then what's your next question? What are you using? Yeah. Now, you're liable to get a lie back from a fisherman that really knows what he's doing. He's not going to give you his secret. But Jesus cries out from the shore, children, you don't have any fish, do you? And even in his question, there's the implication that he knows. Else there would have been some excitement on board. It's probably pretty quiet. And they say, no. That's all they say, no. You don't have to say a whole lot more than that, do you? And then he says, cast your net on the right side of the boat, and you will find fish. And they cast their net, and they pull so many fish up out of the Sea of Galilee that they can't even get it into the boat. And they realize it's Jesus. And the disciple whom Jesus loved turns to Peter and said, it's the Lord. And Peter throws his outer garment back on, and he did not, you know, you've watched the Olympics when people dive, and they give them tens or nines or eights. John's the one writing this, and John, I think, has a sense of humor because he's already let us know that he's a better runner than Peter. He beat him to the tomb. Remember that? And this time he says, he didn't say, and Peter did a swan dive, or Peter went head first. He says, and Peter threw himself into the sea. I mean, he probably capitalizes on the fact that he's a fisherman and not a diver. And he may have even looked like he just kind of fell overboard. He threw himself into the sea. But they're about 100 yards away from where Jesus is standing on the shore. And Peter swims that 100 yards without any problem. He beats the boat in. And he wants to get where Jesus is immediately. Now, we're going to talk next week in our lesson with regards to the two of the great commissions that are given, the last part of Matthew and the middle part of Mark's gospel in Mark chapter 16, verses 15 and 16, what are referred to as the great commissions. And they take place in this same area. We know where they are because they're at the Sea of Tiberias, which is another name for the Sea of Galilee. And so they have moved during this 40 days when Jesus is walking the earth after his resurrection. They have moved 70 miles, possibly, as much as 70 miles back up to the north end of the land of Palestine. And it's because Jesus commanded it. Remember, one of the first things Jesus said whenever he was found to be resurrected from the dead is, tell my disciples to go to Galilee, and there I will meet them. Well, this says it's the third time that Jesus made an appearance to his disciples. So this is appearance number seven to seven men, if you want to keep the number seven in mind. This is his seventh recorded appearance, and it is to seven disciples, not all of them apostles. Nathanael is not listed, as far as I could find, in the apostles, but he is listed by name in this. But there's James and John and Peter. For some reason, Andrew's not mentioned by name, but possibly he's one of the other two disciples toward the end. I can't imagine Peter going to go fishing without his brother Andrew, can you? But what I want us to think about is Christ has told them to go to Galilee. And we're not going to really discuss this in today's lesson. And my question is, why? Why move from Jerusalem, where we know the church is going to begin? It's also going to be the place from which Jesus will ascend into heaven. They're going to come back down to Jerusalem before the 40 days are up. In fact, they're there the last of Jesus' walk on the earth. Why does Jesus, and this is what I want you to kind of think about for this next week, why Galilee? And we'll look at the Great Commissions from Matthew 28, 18 through 20, and then from Mark 16, verses 15 and 16 for next week, and kind of tie in what might be happening with regards to Jesus telling them to go back to Galilee. But you look at this miracle of this draught of fishes, and it's like things have come full circle. Where were Peter, Andrew, James, and John when Jesus called them? 3+ years ago, as they began their walk with him. They were fishing, weren't they? That was their vocation. That's what they do for a living. And Jesus called them and said, "Come follow me and I will make you fishers of men." And it says both Peter and Andrew, those brothers, and James and John, the sons of Zebedee. And Zebedee, by the way, was there with them fishing too, their father. They all four walked away from their boats to follow Jesus. Now, we've seen them on the Sea of Galilee before. They've been on boats as they traverse from one side, even the length of the Sea of Galilee to the other. We've seen Peter attempting to walk on water. We've seen Jesus calming the storm. We've seen Jesus trying to flee the crowds. It's not as if the Sea of Galilee has been a stranger to them. But on this occasion, Peter says, "I'm going fishing." And the other six said, "And we're going with you." What's the significance of that? Could it be they're reverting back to something that they know because they're unsure as to what their future holds? Did Jesus intentionally send them back to the homeland so that they could wrestle with their earthly desires of a vocation that is dear to them, as he puts in their mind what their future really has to be? In my mind, I think that's what's going on here. And yet Jesus does it in a very gentle manner, welcoming and, in fact, rewarding them. How many miracles did we read about in this passage just now? You say, "Oh, well, the drought of fishes." That was a miracle. Jesus didn't have a fish finder. That was a miracle. 153 large fish. How did Jesus know those fish were there? You say, I know there's at least one miracle. Are there any others? Do you think it's coincidental they fished all night but caught no fishes? You say, "I've done that. That's no miracle." Okay, I won't count that necessarily. But it's sure coincidental that they caught no fishes, right? They get to shore, and there's a charcoal fire. Where'd that come from? And fish already cooked. Where'd they come from? And bread ready to eat. Where'd that come from? I think there's more than one miracle taking place here, isn't there? Jesus, the Lord, is setting the stage. And it's welcoming. The other day, I'm not sure just why this thought came to mind, and I mentioned it to Colleen. The number of times as a teenager I went to take care of the livestock before I eat breakfast. We had show calves and show pigs, and we had cows to milk, and we had things to do, and we had to do it all before going off to school, catching the school bus. And I can remember many a morning going out and working for an hour and a half to 2 hours before coming back in to eat breakfast. Do you remember any occasion like that? Has it been recent? What's breakfast like when you started the day working? And perhaps you've already got the heart rate up and the gnaw in your tummy is going after you. What's it like to come into a breakfast that's ready-made and laid out for you to eat? Is that not welcoming? Here they have fished all night, finally caught a draught of fishes. Peter probably is a little chilled. The Sea of Galilee is not the warmest of the bodies of water in Israel. And he's already swam 100 yards. Maybe he's worked up a good appetite. But here Jesus is welcoming his disciples by being their server, their host. And he says, "And bring some of those other fish that you just caught as well. We're going to have us a good banquet here." What's the most important meal of the day? Well, a lot of folks don't eat breakfast. Maybe you're one of those folks that don't eat breakfast because you just don't have an appetite when you get up. On the farm, breakfast is the most important meal of the day. It's what's going to sustain you for the rest of the day. You have to have it in order to have strength to continue with your duties. Here Jesus is feeding them breakfast, And then having conversation with them. Now, let's just step aside from the Sea of Galilee for just a moment. I want you to imagine yourself around the breakfast table. Could be this morning. What'd you have to eat? I don't really want to know. Did you have a cup of coffee? Some hot tea? Glass of juice? Okay, you imagine yourself sitting at the table. Were you alone? Was anybody with you? What's a normal breakfast? I want you to imagine a breakfast, and there sitting in the chair across from you with his own cup of coffee is Jesus. Would you be comfortable with Jesus having breakfast with you? Would you wonder, wow, this has never happened before. I wonder what he's doing here. Think of these seven disciples again, back to the Sea of Galilee, sitting around. Maybe they're squatting down. I'm not quite sure how they would have eaten on the shores of Galilee. When we saw the shores of Galilee, the shore was full of rocks. It wasn't sand. Of course, there's been earthquakes since the time of Jesus, and things have shifted, so I'm not quite sure how the shores of Galilee looked during the time of Jesus. There was one shore on the western side that was full of pebbles, and so it was almost like a little cove, and you could have pulled a boat up into it and kept it from going back out to sea again. But right there at Capernaum, where Peter and Andrew are from, where Jesus now claims is his hometown, and you go to Capernaum, and there is a statue of Peter. He almost looks like Poseidon right there on the shore of Galilee, just on the outskirts of Capernaum. And they want you to know that Peter was a fisherman from here. This is his hometown. So imagine these guys standing around, squatted down. Maybe they're sitting on rocks. I've got a picture of myself sitting on a rock that Colleen took on the shore of Galilee, eating fish, having a conversation. Verse 15 says, "And when breakfast was finished," so they get to have a time where they just commune with Jesus. Oh, how many times is this now since the resurrection that Jesus has broken bread? Two men on the road to Emmaus, remember Jesus took the place of the host, took the bread and broke it. And then it was revealed to them who he was. When he appears that night to the disciples, once again, we've got a situation where they're eating and breaking bread. Now, on this seventh appearance to the seven, Jesus is breaking bread again. You know what breaking bread represents? You say, yeah, I know what it represents. But on even a more common scale, the breaking of bread represents fellowship, communion, the sharing of that which is necessary. And when Jesus provides it to boot, then it's also God's providential care being identified. So he's having coffee with you or drinking juice with you. What's breakfast like? What happens right after breakfast? I know when we had our children all at home and we got through with breakfast, it was like a covey of quail. Things just exploded. I mean, if you weren't awake up until that time, and we did have a couple of kids that would come to the table asleep. You know, they were there, but the eyes were drooping and you got no conversation out of them. But after breakfast, what happens? Well, it's off to school. Did they ride a bike to school? Did you have to take them? Did they walk to school? You know what it's like at breakfast time. The breakfast time is where you put things in order. Maybe you go over the schedule. Maybe you figure out what it is that who's going to meet who, where, and how things are going to happen. A little different here because they've just done their work. They fished all night, and now they've got a catch. You ever wondered what happened to that catch of fish? 153 large fish. What'd they do with it? You say, well, you know what fishermen do with a catch of fish. They take it to the market. We're not told what happened to that catch. I can't imagine that they left them. No, I wouldn't suggest that at all. But let's say they did take them in. and someone says, what were you using? Where were you fishing? How did you manage to get all of those fish? That hasn't been a catch like that in years come out of the Sea of Galilee. What would they have had to say? It's an opportunity to witness, isn't it? And so as we finish breakfast, turn with me now to verse 15 again. So when they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? And that same question in various forms, three times. What's going on? The night before, what was Peter's attitude? I'm going fishing. The night's over and breakfast is finished, and Jesus asks the question this time. Simon, do you love me? And then he puts the hammer on the head of the nail, more than these. This is the suggestion, I think, of a challenge of Peter's vocation, of going back to the old way of life, of not knowing exactly what the future holds for me. Because what are the these? Jesus asks a simple question. Do you love me more than these? Is what I've got written on the marquee. Is he talking about the ones surrounding Peter? Is it his brother Andrew, if Andrew is there? Is it James and John? One of those other six disciples? Do you love me more than these? Did Jesus look those in the eye and come back to Peter and lock eyes with him again? Did Jesus point at the boat and the net? Do you love me more than these? What's implied? I think definitely, at least the implication is, Simon, am I more important to you than a normal way of life? How important is it to you to live a normal life? To work a job? To be surrounded by family? To have the comforts of home? To sleep in your own bed? To receive praise from others? To be kind and courteous? How important is a normal life to us? You say, that's what it's all about. And to a degree, that's absolutely right. But Peter and those other disciples surrounding him have got to reckon with a mission that they have been given, soon to receive a charge or a commission to complete. And it's not going to be normal in any sense of the imagination. Should this catch Peter unawares? Should this questioning to Peter catch him off guard? It seems to. Three times Jesus says, Peter, do you love me? Three times Peter answers, and you think, man, this is just badgering. He's nagging Peter. He's not. Question number one, Peter, do you agape me? Answer number one, I phileo you. You say, what does that mean? Jesus has said, am I the most important thing in your life? And Peter has said, you're my bud. Agape means to do what's best for another, regardless of the cost or how you're treated in return, even to the point of dying if necessary. Phileo means I like you as a friend and a brother. You're a dear companion to me. Do you see the difference between those two? If on the night that you ask her to marry you and you said, honey, I love you with all of my heart, and she says to you, and you've been a great friend. Whoop, better not ask that question because it ain't coming out good, right? That's what's going on here between Peter and Jesus. And so Jesus asks the same thing again. Peter, do you agape me? And Peter responds again, I phileo you. Finally, Jesus says, Peter, do you phileo me? And Peter says, I phileo you. What's going on with Peter's heart? He flung himself into the sea. He swam that 100 yards to his master. He made a demonstration that, yes, I want to be with you. But he hasn't yet understood the full implications of his mission in life. Anybody want to go fishing? Do you love me more than these? And every time Jesus used a variation of this response, feed my lambs or tend my flock. In the process, Jesus is saying, simply put, you're going to change vocations. You're going to cease to be a fisherman and become a shepherd. Now, that would be hard for any fisherman to do, to start taking care of. That's not what Jesus is saying, is it? He is saying to Peter, you've got a mission to take care of the church. You are one of those who has been chosen to follow me. I am about to send you out into the world, and you must be a witness. Think about this time, this occasion. Jesus is walking the earth. Could not Peter and Andrew and James and John and the other disciples that are there have not been in the village at Capernaum or Bethsaida witnessing to the fact that they followed the Master, they know His teachings, that He died upon the cross, that He was buried in a tomb, and that they have seen Him resurrected? Feed my sheep. Now, we're going to get into this more next week as we talk about those great commissions. Right now, we're focusing upon the individual Peter, because Peter represents in microcosm the heart of a Christian. He is the one that's kind of being picked on here by God. But it's the individual responsibility that Jesus expects, especially an apostle to have, that I don't think it's limited to apostles. I think it applies to converts in general. And he's saying, do you love me more than these? Am I the most important love in your life? Lord, are you telling me more than my mate? More than my buds? More than my friends? More than my vocation? More than my plans for my future? And the Lord would say, oh, are you getting it finally? Lovest thou me, my child, more than these? Is it any wonder Jesus needed to walk 40 more days on the earth after His resurrection? What's going on? He is still teaching. And it's after the fact. I mean, they know about the crucifixion. They know about His scourging. They know about His rejection. They know He's never going to sit on an earthly throne. They know about His victory over Satan and rising from the tomb. But they still don't comprehend that the message they've got is the most important message ever. Not just for themselves, but for all mankind. Feed my sheep. And then he says, tend my lambs. Poiene, which is the concept of shepherding. See to their needs. Maybe somewhat incidental to feeding them on the Word of God and witnessing to the things that you have seen in me and heard from me. But certainly, make certain that the church is nurtured and cultured, groomed, and made to where it can thrive in an atmosphere of hope for all eternity. And He rose from the grave and He gave gifts to men. Like a Roman general coming back victorious from a campaign, bringing gifts, and He gave some to be apostles. That's what Paul says in the Ephesian letter in chapter 4. And some prophets, and some teachers, and some pastors, and some evangelists for the building up of the body of Christ. As Jesus looks at these 7 disciples, many of them His apostles, He doesn't see ordinary, run-of-the-mill unqualified men. No, what he sees are those that have followed him for 3.5 years and are still struggling with their purpose in life. Peter, do you love me more than these? Don't you understand what it is I'm asking you to do? It's nice to know the rest of the story, isn't it? Peter got it. At some point before the day of Pentecost, whenever those cloven tongues of fire come down and Peter's the one who preaches that first gospel sermon, there's a transformation that takes place that is almost night and day between what happens here on the shores of Galilee and what happens then in Jerusalem, 50 days after Christ's resurrection. Christ accomplishes what he intends to. Has anyone ever given you an elbow? Has anyone ever slapped you on the forehead? Maybe you did that yourself whenever you finally realized what it was that you needed to do. Jesus needs these 40 days walking with his disciples to tie loose ends. Now, they still don't know the whole story. That will come with the revelation of the Holy Spirit as it descends upon them. And then through the decades that follow as they continue to walk with God. And understand that the gospel is even for the Gentiles by Acts chapter 10. And that the Gentiles don't have to be circumcised by Acts chapter 15. But the church is well established. It's got the direction of the apostles and the elders. And it's still learning things. It's not as if they have everything filled in. But here Jesus goes to the very heart. Lovest thou me more than these? And it's the question we must allow him to ask us. And what better time than at breakfast? If you won't share a cup of coffee with him, can he sit in the seat beside you as you head to work? Do you ever pray while you're driving? Just imagine Jesus sitting there beside you as you drive. Top of the day. Setting of a schedule. Not just going through the routine, but checking in with my master. Lord, what is it you would have me do? And his words will come through loud and clear. Feed my lambs. Tend my sheep. There's nothing more precious than our love for the Lord and for his flock. There's nothing more precious than our love for Jesus and our love for the church. We're doing a study right now on Wednesday nights that's emphasizing the concept of the church. Is it okay to ignore the church? Is it okay to walk away from your brethren? Is it okay to say, oh, those sheep, they're nothing but trouble? If you talk to any shepherds, that's what they'll tell you. They'll say, sheep just die. They don't have to have rhyme or reason. You just go out there one day and their feet are straight up in the air. If you don't take care of them nonstop, you're going to lose them. Is it any wonder that God compares his people to sheep in need of a shepherd? Appreciate the song that Danny led just before the lesson. Jesus is our shepherd. But he also employs those of us who have become Christians and grown in the Word to be his witnesses. To be his hands. Sometimes even to be his shepherds. Let's close with that same question again that Jesus asks. It's a simple one. Do you love me more than these? As we stand and as we sing.